Hello and welcome to episode number 4 of the Eggers Gallery Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Eggers. Our show recognizes and celebrates visual artists who exhibit their art at the Eggers Gallery. If you would like to exhibit with us, keep your eyes peeled for our calls to artists at eggersgallery.com. Today's episode is an interview with visual artist John Schlichta. And now let us take a peek inside the artist's studio.
Hi, my name is John Schlichta. I am a multimedia artist, and my work generally tends to be inspired by such themes as nature, various processes in nature, and how they relate to sort of the human condition, like drawing from things within nature to find symbols to relate to the interactions between humans, more or less. I'm drawn to things like abandoned spaces and vacant lots and the tidal influence back and forth between nature and humanity. And this can take, you know, any form from abstract to representational. It's pretty much just always trying to find new ways to express myself rather than just doing the same thing over and over because I get bored way too easily that way.
Well, perfect. Well, we are excited to have you in our machinery show here at the Eggers Gallery, John. How is your personality reflected in your work?
I guess the obvious thing that I just am interested in a lot of different things, so I draw from a lot of different sources. Other than that, I would say my personality tends to show itself. I'm a bit obsessive, so I tend to be obsessive about detail a lot. I try a lot of times to simplify things, and things just end up getting very complicated, either process-wise or visually. It just always seems to come out. I just can't keep things simple. Just doesn't happen.
It's always worth a try.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes every now and then I succeed, and I'm like, wow, so this is how this feels.
So every artist, you know, can get creative blocks. How do you overcome creative blocks?
Well, to be honest, I rarely have creative blocks. I mean, the one thing I do not suffer from is a lack of ideas. I could stop writing. I have a drawer that has ideas written on it, and I kind of stick things in there, and I wait a while and see if they're still relevant. It's kind of a good nursery for, like, ideas to see what still has, you know, what's strong enough to have relevance over time. And then, you know, if I stop writing things down, I could probably work off the ideas I have in my queue for the rest of my life. So I rarely have blocks, maybe within a work sometimes. Ideas tend to grow organically for me. I don't have, like, perfectly realized ideas right away. I tend to, like, sort of build them like sort of a house of cards. I get an idea, and then I wait a little bit, and then I get another idea that kind of connects to it. And sometimes it takes, you know, it can take a year or two for the fully formed idea before I really start working on it. So I have a bunch of those things all going at the same time. So I never really feel blocked, because if I'm not sure how to proceed on something, I just jump to something else and let it just sort of percolate in the back of my head. I have probably usually about 15 to 20 projects going at the same time. It keeps
good.
Me from...
Too many ideas is a good problem to have, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. But, you know, as I get older, I start to obsess about how many of them am I actually going to get finished before I kick the bucket, you know? You're like...
That's fine. And, what makes art good to you? How do you consider something to be good art?
Well, I feel very strongly about the fact that I like to see the work. You know, if I see someone has something up in a show and it looks like they did it in like a minute, I really just get turned off by that kind of stuff. Granted, there are some really brilliant things out there that look completely effortless and like they did take a minute, and that's, you know, but that's very rare. I like to see, you know, layers of work. You know, I guess maybe it's just because I'm an obsessive myself, but I don't like to see really crappy, shoddy, like, you know, I get really turned off by a lot of conceptual stuff just because it's called visual art for a reason. And if I have to read a 2-page treatise on your work in order to get it, and I can't get something out of it visually, then I kind of feel like you failed. And so I guess that's what it comes down to. I like to see the work, you know. I don't like to see people just phoning it in. It kind of pisses me off, especially if they've already gotten to the point where they have a platform and they're reaching a broad audience and they're just phoning it in. That just, you know, there are so many talented people out there who are just struggling to be known that, you know, I get kind of angry when I see people abusing their status, as if you will. So I like, when it comes down to it, I like to see the work.
And you've spoken before how you usually have multiple projects in the work.
Yeah.
How do you know when a work is finished?
It's you just know, I guess. It's like I've been doing a series. In fact, the pieces that I submitted to your show are part of a year-long thing I did to sabotage my obsessiveness. I did a series of abstract sort of drawing a day pieces, and just to like, you know, I have a day to finish them kind of thing. So it forces you to make decisions quicker. When I first went to art school, I used to be terrified about making marks on like an empty page or something, just because every mark you make is 10,000 possibilities have been taken away from you. So it was a good exercise just to force you to make decisions. And these were all abstract pieces, so I was just basically improvising. And there just comes a point where you just feel like the risk of ruining the piece versus of stopping, you know, it's almost like you're just kind of trying to make the balances equal. There's a point at which you just feel like you're just, anything else is just going to ruin the piece, I guess. It just, you know, sometimes you just know and sometimes you just err on the side of caution. But, you know, technically, you could work on a piece for the rest of your life. I've had pieces that I've picked up after 10 years and started fussing with them again and actually improved them. So it's like there's a point at which you have to just decide you're done. Otherwise, you're either going to ruin it or you could just, you never produce anything else ever again.
True.
Just for your own sanity's sake.
Yes, indeed. And so in your studio or when you're working, what would you say is your most important artist tool, something you couldn't live without?
God, I don't know. Considering that I'm a multimedia person, I'm always looking for new things. I would say one of my favorite things, because I started getting into like paper cutout work. That's kind of like where I really started to get sort of make the transition from just art as a hobby into art as an actual something that I could see as a viable career. And my X-Acto knife and my X-Acto blades, number 11 X-Acto blade. That's my one of my favorite things. I use it for like everything. I've gone through like hundreds of them so far. And the other thing that I really love glues, and I'm obsessed with epoxy resin. I love epoxy resin. Oh, and I do like concrete, too.
Those are all great mediums to work with. When you go about starting a new work, is your drawer the first place you go, or what? How do you start a new work?
Usually, my process is very organic again. Like, it's like things kind of could grow a little bit, and then they sort of sit on the back burner for a while, and then, you know, I'm either, like, listening to something on the radio, or I read something, or I'm walking down the street, and an idea hits me, and then I know that I can connect that to that idea, and then the idea, you know, starts to have more life, you know, more energy, the more like you nurture the idea and try and figure out where you're going to, how you enter it. Some ideas just die and then you come back and you look at them and you just know that don't even remember where you were coming from when you wrote it down. So you're just like, well, that one just goes to the, you know, that goes in the trash. But as long as you can keep an idea nurtured, sort of connecting ideas to it, there just comes a point where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to work on this piece. Or like, you know, there are pieces that I am really just champing at the bit to like get going on, but I know there's some missing piece of the equation that they're not quite ready. And then there just comes a point where you're like, okay, I think I'm ready to start working on this. And, you know, whatever little, you know, extra pieces of the puzzle that are missing will, you know, hopefully fall into place as you're working on the piece. If I'm sort of like running out of steam on something, I can put it on the back burner. So it's kind of like, you know, sort of dancing back and forth between things, sort of like, you know, like a pendulum. As far as starting them, you know, it could be as simple as like, well, I need these particular materials that I've never used before. So I start, you know, looking around in different stores. You know, I'll go to art stores, but sometimes I go to hardware stores or I go to like Home Depot or just, you know, like some kind of material store. A lot of times I really like figuring out the process, especially things I've never done before. So I'm trying to figure out, a lot of times I spend a lot of the early stages just trying to figure out in my head how I'm going to do something, you know, what's the best approach to it. A lot of times, you know, I don't think there's any one specific way. And I think that's important, is to not have a set way of going about things, because it keeps me open to, you know, one, new procedures or different, you know, ways of approaching an idea that some procedures don't work for certain pieces. So I just, you know, have to sort of go with intuition on that stuff. So there's no set way of going about it. You know, it can be as simple as just shopping for material.
Definitely. How would you say your practice has changed over time, like when you first started out till yesterday? Do you have any noticeable differences
Oh, yeah. Well, like I was saying, I mentioned briefly before that I used to, like, when I was in my first year of art school, I was going to Cal State Long Beach, and I used to, like, when we would have an assignment, I would just literally sit there, like, paralyzed, and I'd, like, looking back on it now, I don't understand it at all, but I just, like, that first mark was just so terrifying, because if it wasn't the right mark, then you just either ruin the piece or, like, sacrificing so many other possibilities for this one mark once it's, you know, set. Even if you, like, you know, I mean, if you're working in pencil, you can just erase it, but it's just like where to begin was a really traumatic, it sounds ridiculous saying it now, but at the time it really was like a serious obstacle to overcome. And like I started to learn over time to just get over it and just start, you know, working and work, you know, it goes from there. You just got to trust yourself, basically.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe a like a real life situation that happened to you that inspired you to create a certain piece?
I am working on my first large scale installation. It's called the Ghost Weeds Project, and it's basically a big tribute to my love of vacant lots. I love like empty vacant lots, like that, you know, it's mm-hmm. sort of plays into entropy and like, you know, energy that is not available within a system, you know, and I love the idea of like land that isn't being, you know, utilized because we just are constantly fussing with the environment around us as human beings. And I just love these sort of like limbo spaces. So I actually, down in Portland, near where I live, there's a lot of developing going on. And one day I walked by this site where there used to be these dumpy like stores that had been just razed to the ground. And then it just sat fallow for the next year, and I watched all sorts of different weeds growing up in the lot, and even some species of like plants that I'd never seen anywhere before. And I had been reading this book by Dennis Dutton about the art instinct. Basically, he talks about how art isn't a social construct, how it was something that evolved through basically through human evolution. It sprung out of a bunch of other natural adaptions. And I just got to thinking, he brings up some passage, I can't remember what it is, but talking about earlier man and, you know, like how like druids used to practice in these like landscapes of like, you know, these barren, you know, like nature landscapes and celebrate nature. I started to think with these vacant lots how there was a time when their sacred spots just basically got paved over by, you know, industrialization, and how everything just basically with time gets erased over. And I started to see basically a way. I had gotten an honorary grant from Seattle Print Arts to work on some paper art, and I started making these paper weeds, which was sort of the natural three-dimensional evolution of the paper cutouts I've been doing. I finally saw a way to use those in an installation, and that was where I first started to get the inklings of like, oh, I can make, like, turn this into basically a vacant lot. So it's going to be like a three-dimensional, not just a three-dimensional sculpture, but a three-dimensional installation of paper. And I've been slowly building on that with different ideas about, you know, the ebb and flow between nature and, you know, industrialization, and which has been a lifelong obsession of mine. So that's basically just by walking by this vacant lot, I suddenly saw how I could do it. So anyway, it's like I say, it's like one, you know, little, it's like a house of cards of ideas. You just sort of slowly build this, you know, baby steps.
It's the journey. You know? So other than being an artist, what other jobs have you had?
Oh, God, I've done a lot of different things. I actually was thinking about this last year. I was, like, thinking about all the sort of random different things I did, and I actually was trying to make a list of it. I mean, the obvious ones, of course, I've bartended, you know, done everything from cooking to waiting to dishwashing to serving, you know, in the food service industry. I've been, like, a studio assistant to, like, a glassmaker, to a ceramicist, to various sculptures. I've been worked in a nursery. I've been a house painter. I was even a bartender, actually, on a wooden yacht that was rented out for a week in the Puget Sound.
Oh, wow.
That was interesting. Yeah. I was a dog walker in New York. I was an actor in a short film. I was a paper boy. That was my first job.
So you got to get your start somewhere.
Yeah. I was an AV tech at another museum. I was a tour guide in my hometown at the Cabrillo Marine Museum. I was a janitor. I was an assistant to a stylist in New York, so I, like, built props, and I would actually go to all the prop houses and shop for props for various photo shoots. That was really cool.
Interesting.
What else have I done? Oh, I've even done been on mock juries for, like, money to, like, you know, for lawyers when they're, like, testing out their case.
Huh. You've got quite the breadth of experiences to pull from in your art. Sounds
well, you know, when you're young and it's all fodder for, you know, it's good. It's good to do that stuff because then it's like all fodder for your art eventually.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Pull little pieces from every piece of your past.
Yeah. Nothing is necessarily a waste of time.
Yep, exactly. It's just all part of the bigger picture.
Yep.
What art websites would you say you visit the most often?
As far as art goes, I don't obsessively visit like art blogs or stuff like that. There are a few select people I like sort of looking on from time to time, but I try to, most of the art websites are really just places I go to look for like calls for shows or for residencies or stuff like that. I try to avoid being too obsessive about art websites just because I prefer to like work on my own themes and not constantly be looking over my shoulder at what other people are doing because I don't want it to unduly influence my work.
Definitely.
But, yeah, so I tend to avoid doing too much of that. Usually if I'm following somebody less like directly related to art, like there are certain like interior designers who I like to follow. Like there's a guy in England that I follow. His name's Ben Pentreath, and he does interiors, but I like to follow his blog work because I'm obsessed with the UK and I'm a total Anglophile, and I would love for them to let me move there someday, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But he has a site where him and his partner go down to like Cornwall where they live, and then they go and explore all these cool little towns all over like the UK that are just steeped in like, you know, centuries of history. So there's all these photos of like chapels that are like, you know, 1,000 years old or just like really incredible, like historical and natural stuff that's been around for ages. And I just am fascinated by it. It's like old churchyards and I love all that kind of architectural detail stuff. So stuff like that I'm more likely to follow than say like, you know, like a blog on the Saatchi Art Gallery site or, you know, stuff like that.
And you had mentioned you look for calls for artists and residencies. Where specifically do you go to search those out?
Well, I have a buddy who kind of got me going on this. We went to Cornish together, and he was just obsessively, he was way ahead of all of us, because they never teach you in art school, at least they didn't back then, teach you how to treat it as a business. So we didn't really get a lot of schooling in, you know, resources and stuff. He was just obsessively already applying for stuff in art school. And so at one point he gave us his secret master list of all the things that, you know, all the sites you can go to. So that was a good start. And then from there I realized there's like, you know, I'm constantly finding new stuff all the time. Artist Trust is a really good one in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I go to them all the time. I go to Cafe a lot.
Yep.
Call for entry. And then I also go to, in Portland, there's a Regional Arts Council. They have a good art opportunity page. And then also there's a UK one that I go to occasionally. Can't remember, it's like, can't remember what it's called. It's like yousendthisorsomething.com. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of artist opportunities. Oh, and there's also White Rabbit, which is another British, you know, they do a lot of like gallery guides to like shows that are opening, that kind of stuff, but they also do some art opportunity stuff as well.
On the Eggers Gallery website, we have a call to artists tab that uses, like your friend had that master list. I've tried to provide a master list there so you can go and click on all those sites. I'm always interested of where people go so we can add new sites to that.
Oh, okay.
Keep a master list, as you say, for artists out there.
I'll have to come check your site out. Check out your list. Like I say, there's just it's just insane that, you know, there used to be a time when you had to be represented by a gallery or move to New York and stuff. But nowadays, you can just basically do all this from your home wherever you are. And it's like the internet for artists, the internet is just is the best thing that's ever happened. There's just so much out there that you can find if you just do a little digging.
Where would you say you sell most of your art? Is it on a, you know, a certain website or go to art fairs?
I haven't been selling like tons and tons of stuff. Like I kind of like sort of fell away from the art thing for a while, and it's only since I moved to Portland about 7 years ago that I'm really getting back into it. So I'm still going through a lot of trial and error. I've done some art event stuff, like, gosh, what is it called? Raw Artists that I did a show for in Portland, but that, you know, it's like those kind of events are only good for certain types of art. I've started to discover. Plus you have to like have serious bankroll in order to be able to, you know, fund yourself for them. I sell a decent amount of stuff on Instagram through my Instagram, contacts. And then I sell a lot, you know, sort of word of mouth, either through friends or friends of friends that way. I haven't really got any, hardcore gallery representation type thing. It's mostly been like group show type stuff. Like I say, I'm still figuring that out. I feel like there's so many different types of art out there, and you just kind of got to figure out who your demographic is, and then by dint of that, you can figure out which is the best array to reach those people. And, you know, it's like mm-hmm. everything else. It's like a constant, like, recalibrating process, you know?
Yeah.
I'm still figuring it out. It's all in process.
Yeah. So when you're creating a piece of art, could you walk us through, like, your studio of the mind here? What do you have music on? What type of music is it? Are you creating in the morning, at night? What do you have any routines that you do when you?
Well,
when
again,
creating?
I like to vary it sometimes. You know, that's the I do it. I really like the idea of a studio, but I hate the, you know, having it not in my house because
yeah.
all the time going and coming back and stuff. I like to be able to literally, some days I just roll right out of bed and I like boil water or whatever as I sit down working on art before I even eat. Sometimes I'll work on art for yeah. a couple hours before I even eat anything. Sometimes I listen to the radio, like I'll listen to NPR to listen to what atrocities are going on in the world today. And other times I'm an obsessive, I love books on tape a lot. So, you know, sometimes I'll just find some good books on tape. I'm obsessive about watching movies. So what the best thing about working from home is that I get to watch all the movies I want because I'm just sitting there, like, especially if I'm working on some piece where there's something repetitive that I'm doing, you know, like gluing a bunch of little pieces together that are going to be part of a larger piece, and so I can just sit there and do that and turn my brain off and just watch a two-hour movie, and I don't have to feel guilty about it.
Multitasking at its finest.
Yep. I'm like watching movies and I'm working and I'm like, haha, all you people can't do this.
It's a good life.
Yeah, it's indeed. One of the perks.
Do you have a favorite brand of art supplies? You had mentioned X-Acto. You used a lot of those blades. Are there any other brands that you prefer for certain types of art projects?
Brands, I don't know. I'm all, like I say, either it's because I'm not always using the same stuff all the time. Products are constantly being updated, so sometimes you come back to a product and it's not either works for the thing that you're doing now, like your process has changed. So I wouldn't say that I have, like, particular manufactured products that I go to.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from, like I say, X-Actos and that, you know, the epoxy resin, those two go-to things that I always go to the same. I can't remember the name of the resin people. It's like Dex something. I can't remember. But, you know, I'm always trying, you know, like if I'm making a drawing, I'll try different types of paper than I've used before. I don't know. Like I said, I don't feel like my stuff is repetitive enough where I have go-to products, you know. I don't do a lot of painting these days, so I don't really know what's the good, you know. My brother's an oil painter, and if you said this to him, he'd have, like, you know, very specific things as far as oil paint go that, you know, manufacturers. But my stuff is kind of all over the map, so I don't really have a lot of things that are, like, my go-tos because they don't always work for, you know, what works for one project might not necessarily be appropriate for the next project.
Last question. There's an artist out there. He's like, man, I really like what John's doing. What's the best tip you could give that artist saying, whatever you do, make sure you do blank. What would be your best tip for artists out there?
Oh, I think it's like just important to, oh, it sounds so boring and trite, but to stay positive. Like I've had, like this year I applied for a couple of shows that I really wanted to get into, and I got two rejection notices on the same day. And it was a little bit of a, well, that's a bummer. And you're like, you know, for splits, I usually recover pretty quickly, but I think it's important to just stay positive. And like piece of advice my brother told me once that I'd kept with me is not just in a work, but just as you perfect your craft, you got to enjoy the process. You can't get caught up in, you know, oh, I'm not, you know, selling a bunch of work, or I'm not, you know, finishing this piece quickly enough. It's like you've got to kind of fall in love with the process and not get too obsessed with arriving. That will come in its own time. The other thing I would say is, you know, whether it's writing an artist statement or a proposal, or whether it's the process you're using for a particular type of work, it's like there's always something you haven't thought of. There's always a way to either tweak it or improve what you're already doing. There's always a stone that you have not overturned. And sometimes it's staring you right in the face, and then one day you're like, oh, wait, why, I never thought of that. Or, oh, I should apply to this, or this could be a venue that I could use to sell my work, you know? And it's like, I mean, you kind of got to get a bit obsessive, I guess. If you want to succeed, you've got to really, you know, want to, like, improve, you know, every day. So you got to constantly be figuring out if there's another angle to look at it from. So, yeah,
definitely.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, very good advice that all artists should follow.
Yeah.
And, John, we really want to thank you for participating in the Machinery Show at the Eggers Gallery. Your art is fantastic, and I'm sure everybody's going to run out and check it all out. So it's
good.
That you came along and blessed us with your art. It's been a fun journey.
Well, thank you. And, yeah, this is actually fun for me. I've never done a podcast thing before, so this is a first for me. So right on.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, John, and we wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors.
All right. Thank you so much.
The Eggers Gallery would like to thank all the participating artists at the Machinery Show. Those include John Schlichte, K.A. Letts, Benji Ruckus-Pearson, Brian McClear, Bruce Howard, Matthew Bailey, and Matt Smith. For more information about these artists, you can go to eggersgallery.com. Thank you for joining us on our peek inside the artist studio.